Welcome to On The Money, where you can find out anything and everything to do with finance, business and the money. Is broadcast live from the studios of Radio 2 SER and broadcast nationwide on the Community Radio Network. I'm Roderick Chambers, and with just a few more days to go until Budget 2017, we have all the information you need to find out how it will affect you.
Position in the first 3 years of government, saying, you know, debt and deficit disaster and all debt is bad, he's finally acknowledged that you can actually have some good debt.
We look at what exactly Treasurer Scott Morrison means by good debt and bad debt in a pre-budget speech last week. And
the highest level of concern about the quality of public policy debate that it has been picking up.
With so much debate, what do businesses exactly want in the upcoming budget? Also,
the challenge and yet the great opportunity for Australia in terms of cybersecurity, and some of our leading entrepreneurs, such as those from Atlassian, Mike Cannon-Brookes, coming out supporting this idea that this is a space that Australia can play in.
We talk with the UTS's Associate Professor Danielle Logue about what innovation measures could be in the budget. Cybersecurity experts could be winners. All this and more coming up on The Money. Tax reform and superannuation are two of the more underreported areas in budget speculation this year. Clear focus from the Business Voice is prioritising tax reform, as John Freeband from the University of Melbourne puts it. Hans Lee spoke to Dr. David Bond, Senior Lecturer in Accounting at the University of Technology, to find out why the media hasn't covered much of either of these two things.
I'd say this probably hasn't been as much talk because there were actually quite a few changes last year, if you remember back to 12 months ago. So there were a range of changes to the contributions cap and sort of how much super you could have before you started getting taxed on the additional amounts you had sitting there. So there has been a lot of change to the system. And I suppose, you know, as people start to try to prepare for retirement and sort of make their plans, if the system keeps changing, then it makes it hard for people to plan for their retirement. So you don't want to make too many changes too often. So you do want to sort of recalibrate the system where it needs it, which is what they were trying to do last year, but you don't want to be changing things year on year on year on year. So we haven't heard much about it this year because I think they're just leaving it alone.
Of last year's budget tagline for super, if you may remember, was, quote, making the system more sustainable. Do you feel positive about its sustainability, as they'll term it?
I'd imagine the tagline was in part because of what happened in the 2014 budget, and they were trying to rectify some of this in the sense that 2014 budget was seen as a really unfair budget, and they were trying very hard to sort of move away from unfair. It's about making changes which are good for the entire country. In terms of making it more sustainable, I mean, certainly it will affect a number of people right at the top end of the amount with large amounts of super sitting there. It's not going to hit a huge amount of people. A number of people will be slightly worse off, and a number of people at the bottom end of the system will be slightly better off. So if that's seen as making it more sustainable, then yeah, that I think is a pretty fair thing to say.
The other main concern that's been brought up by businesses, again talking about this underreported story though, is that it's tax reform is also what they want to see budget. What do you expect to see out of the budget in that regard?
I'm not expecting, in terms of just tax reform, I'm not expecting a huge amount. Last year, so they had their 10-year tax plan, which was taking the corporate tax rate down from its current level of 30%, sort of moving it down immediately for small businesses, and then slowly working everyone else to 25% over this 10-year, the glide path that they called it. So there was.
Do you think that'll see just a re-mention in the budget speech at least?
They may sort of have some statistics there that are saying that, you know, we're seeing this driving something, but in terms of changes and or additional work on it, I don't see you will see too much. They have got in place diverted profits tax. They've been looking at multinational tax avoidance. So, I mean, these things are already built into what they did last year. So I don't think you'll see too much change on that. I mean, we also saw the change to the to the threshold for low value imports in relation to GST. And that is slated to start on the 1st of July. But there's been some pushback from a number of organisations, you know, Amazon included, to say this may not be workable.
That's Dr. David Bond from the University of Technology there, ending that report by Hans Lee. You're listening to On the Money, finding out anything and everything to do with money, finance and business and Budget 2017. We're broadcasting around Australia on the Community Radio Network for studios of Radio 2SER in Sydney. I'm Roderick Chambers. Well, we've been hearing announcements about education this week, with universities and students seemingly losing some funding and a new Gonski Mark II for schools. I'm joined by Associate Professor Danielle Logue, who's been looking at some of these measures. Danielle, will we hear any more on education in this budget 2017, do you think?
So we've heard a little bit about education this week in terms of the university sector and funding, student numbers and students repaying fees. I think we may want to pay attention to any possible changes in research funding. So that may be in the block funding for universities, perhaps for our other research institutions, such as the CSIRO as well. That's still to come out.
Yes, because I remember the CSIRO had some big cuts, and
that's right.
And it was changing the way in which they were perhaps perceived in terms of research.
That's right. They had a $40 million cut, I think, last year. So still seeing the fallout from that.
Yes, yes. But more been specialising in the innovation space, and the Prime Minister's also interested in that. What do you think he might do in certain areas that you've been following?
Well, I've been following this since our amazing ideas boom, of course. So, look, last year we had a bit of a focus on fintech as well, and there always seems to be one sexy innovation area that is a nice case study with the budget in this space. This year, I think we may have some more movement on cyber and cybersecurity. We had the new industry minister, Arthur Synodinos, coming out recently talking about the challenge and yet the great opportunity for Australia in terms of cybersecurity. And some of our leading entrepreneurs, those from Atlassian, Mike Cannon-Brooks, coming out supporting this idea that this is a space that Australia can play in.
So what sort of thing would government do to encourage this, do you think?
Well, I think it ties into this digital transformation effort too, and the different software, the systems that are needed for trust, for security. So there could be more work coming out in terms of tendering and government contracting in this space, given the issues that we've had over the year with this. But maybe also similar to what we saw in fintech last year is trying to put Australia on the map and promoting us as a place where we have capacity and skills and firms that are doing this type of work for the region.
So is he sort of over from Wyatt Roy in being the technology type minister, do you think, Mr. Synodinos?
Perhaps this area, isn't it? I mean, tomorrow what's interesting...
A bit of a stretch for him, maybe.
Maybe. It's a good attempt. We can reward the effort, perhaps. Tomorrow, actually, at Stone and Chalk, the fintech incubator that was a focus of last year's budget, we have Chris Bowen and Ed Husick giving a pre-budget speech and presentation on the vision for innovation and the future of work.
So what do you think could be innovative in terms of the way we work?
Well, I guess one of the issues that we've had is a long-term focus on our R&D tax incentive as kind of an industry, generic industry policy to support SMEs in R&D in particular. And something around that could be helpful. That is the bulk of our business support for innovation. It's about 93% of the budget for business support for innovation is this R&D tax incentive. In the past year, we've had our Senate inquiry into the innovation system with a lot of recommendations around that. So hopefully they're going to build off the Senate inquiry and the different recommendations in there around having a national innovation board, specialising in different technologies so we get a competitive advantage in the region and issues like that. There was a lot of focus last year on collaborating and translating research, lots of smaller grants for bringing SMEs, academics, different industries together, but it's hard to translate research when there's nothing there to translate.
Yes, I suppose you're right.
Where are the ideas? I'm looking for the big ideas.
Well, I'm looking for some big ideas too, and it'd be interesting to see what Scott Morrison and the government come up with on Tuesday night. And we, of course, have got exclusive coverage coming direct from Canberra, so stay tuned with 2SER FM and the Community Radio Network throughout Australia, because we will be live from Canberra, from the budget. Thanks very much, Daniel, for coming in.
Thanks for having me. See you in Canberra.
See you in Canberra. Yes, so that was Associate Professor Daniel Logue there, giving us the lowdown on some of the technological innovations that may be coming our way in the budget. I got a
budget. We are a nation of lifters, not leaners.
First, by sticking to our plan for jobs and growth.
I accept that what he's doing with his cuts is moving the burden of Medicare from the government to the private individuals.
The age of entitlement is over.
Federal Budget 2017 is imminent, and here at On the Money, we'll be providing complete coverage direct from the budget media lockup in Canberra at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, both on 2SER and over the Community Radio Network. Tune in then. Yes, we're loving it here at On the Money. You're listening to On the Money, broadcast nationwide on the Community Radio Network, Roderick Chambers. Treasurer Scott Morrison last week announced that the government would split up deficit fund spending into good debt and bad debt, saying that there was a case for deficit spending when it comes to long-term investments. Matt Grudnoff, a senior economist at the Australia Institute, spoke to Vincent Su about whether good debt and bad debt is a good way of highlighting deficit spending.
I think it is. I think that the Treasurer has taken one more baby step towards better policy. So we started out when they were in opposition in the first 3 years of government, saying, you know, debt and deficit disaster and all debt is bad. He's finally acknowledged that you can actually have some good debt. My main concern is that what he considers, what category he puts in good debt and bad debt, it seems, again, he's gone for the simplistic, if you build something, it must be good debt, and if you don't build something, then it must be bad debt.
So what sort of spending would be categorised as good debt then?
Well, good debt is something that enhances the productivity of the nation. And at the moment, because the government's borrowing at just over 2%, it can actually do quite a lot of things in order to enhance productivity. But that doesn't mean that every infrastructure project is good debt. So, for example, the government's thinking about building a train line into the middle of nowhere where coal happens to be. If coal becomes less useful and we move away from it, we could have just wasted $1 billion and have no income stream into the future because nobody wants the rail line. On the other side, if we take something like health spending, we're not actually building any large infrastructure, but health and also education spending acts and can actually be good debt.
A deficit's good debt will make the government more inclined to spend money on essential infrastructure, urban transport.
Hopefully it will. Certainly urban transport, again, can improve productivity by moving people around cities more easily. It can help with housing prices. It can do all sorts of good things for the country. So hopefully the government will look at these things. The other side of this too to consider is that hopefully the government is not just using these labels in order to try and make the deficit look smaller. So if the government this is just a cynical move by the government just to reduce the amount the size of what the deficit looks like by labelling some debt good debt, this would be also disappointing.
So as a hypothetical, if investment borrowed using good debt, so-called good debt, goes sour, would this mean that it is still good debt?
Well, no. I mean, sometimes it's difficult to measure all the benefits associated with that. Don't necessarily have to just flow to the government. If they flow to the society more widely, then it could still be considered good debt. But building infrastructure gets basically as a stranded asset that falls into disuse and nobody wants, well, then that's obviously bad debt.
Will have the debt help the government get back to surplus within the next 5 years as forecast by the government in previous budgets, roughly?
I think that what we've seen from this government is that the deficit hasn't really changed at all over the last three budgets. It's always remained around the mid-30s to high $30 billion mark, despite continuous claims that it is going to be reduced into the future. So, I mean, if we continue along like that, I imagine that, no, we won't move to surplus in 4 or 5 years. I think the problem the budget has is it has a serious revenue problem, not a spending problem, and the government seems to be completely against raising any revenue that might reduce the budget deficit. The government could very easily reduce it, willing to raise the revenue to do so.
In the age of Trump, I just want to ask, will good debt and investment help Australia shelter itself from any potential volatility in the Trump administration?
Well, I mean, investment spending will certainly help Australia if it makes it more productive. If we become more productive, then we're better able to absorb any international shocks, whether they come from America or anywhere else in the world. The idea is if you're a productive nation, then you're able to produce income internally, then you are more resistant to worldwide shocks.
Yeah, Matt Grudnoff, Senior Economist at the Australia Institute, ending that report by Vincent Su. Well, this week, the Australian Institute of Company Directors released their latest business sentiment index. Confidence amongst in nations' boardrooms are at a 6-year high, and the future looks even brighter. So what's the key information out in this report, and what are they looking for on budget night? Hans Lee spoke to Louise Petchler, General Manager of Advocacy at the Australian Institute of Company Directors, to find out.
Well, it's definitely a sign that directors' mindset is in growth mode. We saw in the last Director Sentiment Index in the second half of last year a big dip in terms of sentiment. Directors were particularly concerned about Brexit and Trump and a bit more pessimistic about the Australian economy. And this time round, we've seen that pessimism has been certainly reduced in terms of the prospects for the economy. And really, one of the things driving this positive boost in sentiment is the highest level of growth optimism around their own businesses, so the organisations that they're sitting on the boards of, both increasing staff and investment. So we think that is a real sign that there's a positive growth mindset at the highest levels ever, in fact, that we've seen that view of positive sentiment about what's going to happen in their own businesses, and it's definitely boosted the overall sentiment index. So we were a little surprised to see it come up so significantly, but when we dive in and have a look at the results, we think that is a really positive sign. You know, let's hope that the budget has some practical and positive initiatives that can take that momentum and build that more widely around the economy.
Talking about the budget then, I know the budget is a huge factor in your Business Sentiment Index report. What are the key priorities and dangers you are looking to see for on budget night?
Well, I think one of the first things, and you know, we talk about the overall positive view of director sentiment, one thing that does cause you to step back a bit and take breath is that really it's 9 in 10 directors are rating the quality of public policy debate in Australia as poor. And, you know, over 80% of them feel that Parliament is not a positive contributor to economic growth, that it's negatively affecting business confidence.
But that's not necessarily a new development, is it?
Look, this is the highest level of concern about the quality of public policy debate, but it has been picking up over, we're now in the 7th year of the survey, and it has been steadily growing over that period. But to be at a point where 9 out of 10 say, you know, the quality of public policy debate is poor or very poor, that is a real concern. And we think that's, you know, as we step back and think about where are we going in some of these policy directions that we'll see more of in the budget, you know, there is a real hunger from certainly the governance community for some more long-term thinking and focus on the national interest.
Last month, we found out that consumer confidence was at an 18-month low. I'd ask from you, why do you think business sentiment is still high in this regard?
Well, I think that the prospects of their own businesses and frankly, we've seen that the pessimism around what might happen with the US economy and European economies really hasn't come through in the market. So, you know, some of that pessimism has dropped off. Looking ahead, directors in particular taking that longer-term view are seeing signs of optimism. So we're seeing some pointers there around the longer-term views that could boost productivity and drive it, and a bit of a call to action for that longer-term thinking in terms of political decision-making.
And Louise Petchler there of the Australian Institute of Company Directors speaking with Hans Lee, and she certainly seems very confident with that report coming out. You're listening to On the Money on 2SER FM and the Community Radio Network. I'm Roderick Chambers. Now, on the line right now, another person that may be feeling a bit confident, I'm not sure, is Peter Strong. He's CEO of the Small Business Council of Australia. Can you hear me there, Peter?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, brilliant. Well, you're in Canberra there, so the place of pace when it comes to budget matters. We'll be coming down very soon to join you. what's the Small Business Council of Australia hoping to get from the budget? Any more tax cuts, do you think, coming your way?
Oh, I don't think there'll be any more tax cuts. I mean, we'd certainly like that to be accelerated. Tax cuts are good for the economy. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. But the other thing is to give confidence to the small business sector. We're people. We're not boards of directors that all talk to each other and plan things sort of 10 years ahead. Well, actually, they normally plan things 3 months ahead. We are individuals and we run on confidence. So one of the things we're looking for is the $20,000 instant tax write-off to be extended. We'd like it to become a permanent part of the tax regime, but certainly it should be extended for another couple of years.
Cool, because that came in the 2015 budget, didn't it?
That's right, yeah. And it's a good way of getting people to grow their business.
And what sort of things, has it really grown some of the businesses? Do you think it's worked?
Yeah, well, the figures all point to the fact that it's been used. It's being used more than they planned, and they're quite happy with that because if people are out there spending money and buying goods and expanding their business, then what that means, of course, is there's going to be more jobs, and it also means there's going to be more money moving through the economy, so there'll be more GST collected. Be more businesses that are selling things, so it's a good mechanism to get the economy going, or to have the economy continue to grow. You've got to make a profit to actually use it, so it's not just there as a freebie for people. You've got to be a business, and a real business. You can't just set up a business to try and claim it. It makes no sense. It's a very good business support mechanism, and we hope it's extended.
Yeah, and you've also been talking about priority investment innovation as a stimulus measure. Give us a bit of an idea of what you're talking about here.
With innovation, not everybody wants to innovate. Let's get that out there. Most small business people are just happy doing what they're doing. But there's a certain percentage of them, and it may only be 10 or 15%, but that's a lot of people. That's still 200,000 or 300,000 businesses who want to grow and they want to innovate. They believe that they've got a new idea that can help their business grow. They've got a new idea, a new product, a new process, whatever it is, that the consumer will like or that big business will like, and they can sell it to them. Now, what that does is adds to productivity. So anything new that grows a business is a productive. It's not like we see Coles and Woolworths or retailers. They don't add value to a product. They sell it. It's the people that manufacture products, the people that grow things, it's people that produce things. They're the ones who add value, and adding value is what makes an economy grow, and that's where we've got to get innovation happening.
And the government has also put some measures in the past to help small businesses get younger workers involved earlier, and there's been some programs to encourage job seekers to get to work. Have you seen much benefit for small business from these programs?
Well, I've got to admit we haven't. And the big issue is the mechanism by which it's put into the community. It's the government-funded employment services and their private sector, which in theory I should totally support, but they do not provide a very good service to the small business sector. Yeah. It's called Job Active, and they're failing. And that's one of the areas in our recommendation. We've said the government should stop and look at that. And we don't want more money. It's been much better than what's happening now.
Well, maybe Scott Morrison is looking for places where he can get claw back a bit of money for his spending measures. What do you think's happened with the cutting the red tape? That was another thing too. Has that helped small business?
Oh, well, it has. It's one of the funny things. When you're running a business, you'll notice a change and you think, oh, that's good, and then you just get on with it. So often these things... you notice and you move on. What we've got to do, we've even started changing the language now. It's instead of saying let's get rid of red tape, which has become a bit of a catch cry, we're saying let's get rid of complexity. Now, getting rid of complexity is good for everybody, not just the businesses. It's also good for regulators. So we've seen a problem out there with the 7-Elevens and people not paying the right money. You should pay the right money. I mean, the rules. But we need to make the system simpler for the regulator to go and do what the regulator does. And if you have a simple system, less complexity means that the dishonest people are going to struggle, because complexity really is on the side of dishonest people. There's no doubt about it. And if it's simpler, that means the people that want to do the right thing will find it easier to do so. So we want to have a simpler system in workplace relations, in the tax area, in competition policy, all those sorts of areas is where we'll have some big wins if we can get simpler systems in there. So let's keep cutting red tape, but let's make it make sense by reducing complexity.
And just quickly, Peter, you've also been putting forward that the government should be funding programs for domestic violence leave and things like that. Can you briefly describe what that will do to help small business?
Well, first of all, domestic violence leave, we are not in favour of it. We believe domestic violence needs to be dealt with, not put into the workplace relations system where you just give up and say, well, it's going to happen anyway. The biggest problem we've got with domestic violence leave is that if you might have, there may really be two victims, but one of those victims may be the owner of the business. Now, nobody ever considers the owner of the business as a person, and yet in small business, they're all people. And you can't have a situation where one victim is forced to work harder to cover for another victim who's gone off to deal with the particular situation. We've said if you have to do it, then you put the experts in charge of it, the welfare people that know about this, and they're the ones who decide whether someone should get leave or not. The leave is paid for by the government, and that way the victim can even keep it private. They don't have to tell their employer what's happening. They just take a day off if they have to. Do that as they do. So we actually aren't in favour of domestic violence leave. It actually embeds domestic violence in a system, and that's not what we want.
All right, Peter. Well, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for coming on to the On the Money program, and perhaps we'll see you around the traps in Canberra.
Yeah, I'll see you next week. Thank you.
That was Peter Strong, from the CEO of the Council of Small Business Australia. Well, that's about all time we've got for you here at On the Money this week. We'll be down at the budget next week and providing you all of the wash-up and who are the winners and who are the losers on our next program next week. Thanks for being with us. I'm Roderick Chambers, and it's been a pleasure to be with you here on the Money.
A nation of lifters, not leaners.
First, by sticking to our plan for jobs and growth.
I accept that what he's doing with his cuts is moving the burden of Medicare from the government to the private individuals.
The age of entitlement is over.
Federal Budget 2017 is imminent, and here at On the Money, we'll be providing complete coverage direct from the budget media lockup in Canberra at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.